I'm Betsy Foldis-Myman, and this is ConnectedPod Changing the Narrative. This is a series where we collaborate with youth in communities that get a bad rap. We break down the stereotypes, and then we create a more complex narrative, because no one is a single story. For Season 3, Changing the Narrative, Unhoused Youth, Stories of the Tay, we're in residence at the Village Family Services Drop-In Center for Homeless Youth in North Hollywood, collaborating with the Tay. Who are the Tay, you ask? The Tay are transitional aged youth ages 14 to 24, and we're going to find out what their story is from them. Because of COVID, we've had to do things a little bit differently. So no groups, no special guest artists, no workshops, no field trips, no group brainstorming. It was a challenge for sure, but we dug in and we changed things up. And you know what? It wasn't all bad. Our new process is two parts. Part one, we have interviews with each Tay, and they're going to share their stories with us and how they got to the situation that they were in, what they hope for their future, and how they're handling things right now. And the second part, after we understand more of who they are, we're going to match them with one of our professional media artist mentors. And via three Zoom sessions with their mentor, they are going to create their very own episode talking about whatever they want to talk about in the way that they want to talk about it.
Hello, test 1, 2.
We're also very lucky to have Alejandro Soria.
Today I'm going to start with a song I wrote when I was 6 years old.
The director and counselor at the DIC sitting in on these sessions.
Test 1, 2.
The Tay that we're working with are in all different parts of their journey. Some have just become homeless and are starting to figure out what they're going to do and how they're going to handle this. Some,
my voice is tiny.
Like our very first interviewee, Gail Alvarez, is on the other side of it. She's been through a lot, and she's made her way, and now she's working to help others get through as well.
Start simply with just telling me your name.
Okay, my name is Gail Alvarez.
With Gail, the word that kept coming up in my mind was accountability. I am blown away by how this girl is so accountable for her own life, about her situation that she found herself in, how she was going to get out, and how she was going to create a new life for herself.
What else do you want to know?
Okay. Well, why don't we start with, since I don't know you at all, let's start with your whole story. Let's start with your...
How I came to the village and everything?
Yeah. How you came to the village and how you ended up working here.
Okay. Well, I came here in the year 2017, I think around July. I was referred here from my school. I had family problems and I had just got out of a really bad relationship. So I had to move back in with my parents, but it didn't work out, and my mom kicked me out. I also chose to leave, too, because she uses, and I didn't want to be around that. So I went to school. I was going to school at Sochi, and I asked for resources, and they gave me a bunch of papers, and the first thing that I saw circled was the village.
What is Sochi?
It's a Southern California Health Institute. It was a trade school to get, like, my medical assistance program.
Oh, it's over in Reseda, right?
Yeah.
So in 2017, how old were you?
21.
21.
I just turned 21, yeah.
Yeah.
And they gave me papers, and they said, I don't know, for some reason I saw the village circled and highlighted. So I was like, okay, I'll try that out. So I ditched school. I told them I wasn't coming back that day, and I came here. And it was kind of weird because back then they used to have that door open. So I came in through there with my backpack, and I felt, I've never been through a center like this, so I was kind of like, I felt out of place. but right away, one of the employees, I think it was Evan, he came through and he asked me if I've ever been here, and then he checked me in through here. And then he gave me the rundown of everything. And the people were very, like, warm and welcoming, like the clients. They're like, hey, like, oh, you're new here, I don't know you, like, do you work here? And I'm like, no, I don't work here. Like, I'm here for services. But that's how I came to the drop-in center. And then eventually they helped me get into a temporary job, two temporary jobs. The first one was the EDD office, so I was helping people with unemployment, like filling out the paperwork. That was an internship that lasted about a month, because then I moved on to FEMA. I worked for FEMA for about 4 months. When Hurricane Maria, I forgot what else, when that whole hurricane started happening.
Wow.
So I did that for 4 months. That was a cool experience, and eventually it ended because it was temporary, and I came back here, and I was housed by then because they helped me get an apartment here. I came here and kept like, hey, remember me? I want a job here. Like, I was a client. I want a job. And eventually I got an interview, and then I got hired.
And what's your job here now?
Now I'm an employment specialist. I started off as a peer support specialist. Yeah.
Well, and what does that mean, a peer support specialist?
Basically just interacting with the youth and asking them, like, oh, like, what are you here for today? What can we help you with? And then referring them to the case managers or to the employment specialist or to therapists, just I guess to make them feel more comfortable with, like, oh, hey, it's someone my age, someone I can talk to. And the showers, yeah.
Yeah.
And all the things that they need here, like essential needs, like hygiene and all that.
Right. Yeah. And coming from, I guess, you know, you could really connect with them because you had been through similar,
yeah,
right?
That's something like when they come in, that's something I used to, even up to now, I tell them, like, hey, I was a client myself. Like, if you think no one gets you, trust me, I get you because I've been through it myself. Like, I was in your shoes on the receiving end. I was taking showers here. I was asking for clothes here. I was brushing my teeth in that restroom, you know, like, so I try to explain to them and they're like, oh, that's really cool. And I feel like in a sense they feel a little more welcome because then they feel like, okay, she understands it. She's been through it, you know.
Yeah.
She knows what it's like to live in a shelter. She knows what it's like to not know who to talk to or who to trust, basically. So I feel like it creates better rapport when I express that to them. Yeah.
I can see. Well, you're so warm and open and together.
Yeah.
That, you know, I look at you and I think, wow, you know, and this is like a prejudice to a lot of people. Like, how could this person ever have been, you know, homeless? How could that, you know, how could that have happened?
I would have never thought in my life I would end up homeless. I remember when I was younger, my dad would tell me, like, oh, if you don't go to school, you know, this and that, you'll end up homeless, like these people. So growing up, I was, I guess, kind of scared of homeless people because I didn't, that's the, I guess, the stigma that people put on that. But when I experienced homelessness, I was like, wow, like I never thought I would experience this and I never thought the circumstances in my life would lead me down this road. But I did. And it changed my aspect on a lot of things. And it also humbled me a lot.
I can imagine.
Yeah. So I don't know. I guess I fell into homelessness mainly because of my mental health. Growing up, I didn't belong or fit in. I knew something was off about me and with my sisters too. Like, we had a rough childhood, but I felt like I was a little more sensitive than they were. So I always felt different, but I guess the year 2017 was like where I hit rock bottom because I moved in with my partner and we ended up splitting because a lot of things were, like, a lot of triggers were triggering me and a lot of things were happening and we would argue a lot. So he ended up telling me, like, hey, you need help. And I went to ask help from my parents, but my dad's been MIA since I left him, like, when I was 17. But my mom didn't know how to help me because she uses and she's on survival mode herself.
So was it depression for you? Is that, or was it a mix of other things?
It was a mix of a lot of things. At the time, I didn't know what it was. But now, years later, I know what it is. I have borderline personality disorder, and I'm also bipolar. So my mood shift a lot, and a lot of things trigger me. And I get, sorry, I'm getting emotional.
No, that's okay.
I get out of control. Yeah. And sometimes I don't recognize myself. So that was the main reason why I fell into homelessness, because I would get in fights and I would argue with people, even people that I say I loved. I acted like I didn't love them because of the thing that goes on in my brain. Yeah.
Oh, that must have been so scary.
Yeah. Yeah. It still kind of is, but I'm learning to cope day by day. Yeah.
And how did you get help for it? I mean, I am so impressed by you. I just have to say, because dealing with mental health is really hard, and it's really hard to say that you need that help. That's like the hardest thing, right? But you did it, and you did you ask for help first and then become homeless, or were you homeless and then you found help, or was it?
I was homeless and then I found help. I didn't, honestly, it wasn't until maybe last year I started accepting that, hey, there's something wrong with me. 2017, that's when they diagnosed me with just borderline. This year, now they diagnosed me with a lot of things. But, yeah, I didn't know. I think in the beginning, around those, like 2017, I was in denial. I was like, no, there's nothing wrong with me. I'm okay. Like, it's just people are just overreacting to me. Or, like, they just don't know how to be with me. Or they think I'm dramatic or something. But now I've accepted it. Like, hey, this is not who I am, but this is something I have to deal with every day, and now I have to cope around it, and I have to see what works for me and what doesn't work for me, and I have to voice that out. Like, for a long time, I like to stay quiet and not say what's going on, but now I'm speaking up and I'm talking, like, hey, I don't feel good, or hey, I need help. And I've been going to therapy, and just being communicative to everyone.
So then, do you take medication for everything, or do you?
Yes, I just started medication last month.
Is it helping?
It has helped a lot. I've had a lot of episodes the past few months. I think the coronavirus also kind of played into that.
Yeah, but, I can imagine.
I've been able to stabilize myself more. Yeah.
Wow. You are so impressive. You really are. I mean, those are not easy issues to deal with at all. I mean, even if you have nothing else going on, and then to throw everything that, you know, that you're dealing with on top of it. So do you think now, like looking back on your mom, do you think you said that she was in survival mode, but do you think that she has similar?
When I first moved with her, I was like, this lady is too... She was too open with me. I didn't feel like she was my mom. Like, she was gone for, 10 years. She left me and my sisters with my dad. So I didn't see her for about 10 years. And when I moved with her, it was because I was fleeing from my dad. My dad was very abusive. And when I turned 17, I couldn't do it anymore. And I left. And I stayed with my friends for a while. But then I exhausted all my resources, and I couldn't be with my friends because their parents started asking questions. Like, where are her parents? Where does she live? So then that's when I realized, okay, I got to reach out to my mom. If my dad's not helping, I got to reach out to my mom. So when I reached out to her, she was too cool. Like, she didn't feel like a parent. And I didn't know she was using at the time. But I ended up, I did notice that she was going through things. And I dropped out of high school to take care of her because she would have her episodes.
Wow.
I think maybe in a sense, taking care of her kind of affected me too. Maybe it was traumatic for me as well. And I'm just realizing that now, but I feel like maybe taking care of her affected me all these years.
Wow. Do you think taking care of her made you able to look at where your life was going? I guess what I'm asking is, did taking care of her make you make better choices for yourself?
In the beginning, no, because then I felt like I was consumed by wanting to take care of her and be there for her. And then I was also angry because I was like, why am I like this if she was gone for 10 years? Why am I trying to take care of her? She just, up and left. So I felt kind of upset at myself. Like, I don't know. Like, I felt like she didn't deserve it, but I felt like she deserved it because she was my mom. But I feel like now it has helped me. But I guess she also told me that her seeing me and how much I've grown has helped her grow and want to go to therapy herself. She takes medication, but she's never tried therapy.
How did you go from living with her, then you moved in with your boyfriend? Is that what happened?
Yes. He ended up, he was living with his parents, his mom and the boyfriend, and they didn't get along, so he got kicked out. And he needed somewhere to stay. And then it was very rocky with my mom, too, so we decided to move in together. And that's what we did. We did that for almost a year, but then it got bad. We would get into bad fights. The cops would get called, and instead of him going to jail, I would go on 5150.
What's 5150?
Where they put you on in the, what is it called?
Mental health hold.
Yeah, mental health hold. So they would admit you to a hospital, and they'll keep you there for 72 hours, and the doctor has to declare you okay to go back out into society.
Wow. So he was abusive, and you were the one that got put on the hold.
He wasn't abusive because I think most of the time I would start it.
Oh, you would start it?
Yeah, because I don't know. I felt like I needed help, but he didn't know how to help me. And there was a lot of things that played into it, too. Like, I would drink a lot at that time. Not something I'm proud of, but I would drink a lot, and I would get out of control, and I would hurt myself. I would hurt him, throw things. So I saw my mom and me. So that's when I realized, okay, I need help. Yeah, I need help.
Wow. When you were taken into 5150, was that almost like a break, like someone was helping you? Or was it like...
No, I hated it. They put me in cuffs on a gurney.
Oh.
And I didn't feel comfortable. Like, they could have talked to me like, hey, we're going to take you, but instead they cuffed me to a gurney and they brought me to the hospital and people staring at me like that did not make me feel comfortable at all. It made me feel like I didn't belong there. And the first time I ever experienced staying there, I was so angry. I got my book stolen. I was so mad. Like, I didn't have a good experience. I felt like the experience was not helpful at all. But then the second time I admitted myself. And I felt like that experience helped me a lot and helped me see things that I did not see before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. And so then how did you go from that to homelessness?
So I was still staying with him, and we were not broken up yet, and we were trying to work things out. And actually, we broke up the day after my 21st birthday. And I stayed there. Actually, I think I overdosed. So I, he was my life. And I took pills. I don't know why. And I blacked out. He saved my life. That's not the first time. That's the second time he saved my life. The first time I tried to hang myself. Yeah. And he took me to the hospital, and nothing changed. We still broke up. But I still stayed at the apartment with him till the end of that month. And then I moved in with my mom. And I stayed with her for 2 months. And she told me, you don't have to work. The only thing you have to do is go to school. That's why I went to Sochi. One day, I guess she had her episode. She tripped out on me, and she was like, you need to apply for jobs. And I was like, you told me school. Like, I'm going through a lot right now. I'm just trying to focus on school. I was going to school for full time, so I was there 7 to 3. And I understand, like, I could pick up a part-time job or something, but with all the things that I was experiencing, I felt like it was too much for me. And she didn't understand that, so she got in my face, and it got physical. And then my sister joined, and I blacked out. And I hit my sister and beat her up, and she went to the hospital, and I got kicked out that night. And then I didn't know where to go. I had a car at the time, so I was sleeping in my car. And I don't know. I think my car got towed, I think my mom called it because it was right outside. And then that's when I was like, oh, I have nothing, like absolutely nothing. So that day I went to my uncle's house, and my uncle said I could stay there, but I chose not to live with him because I didn't want to stay stuck. So that's why I went to school, and they asked me what I needed. They gave me resources, and I came here. And I was very extremely lucky and blessed when I came here because I was asking everyone around how long the process took. They said about a few months to a few weeks. I got housed that night. I got housed that night at LA Family Housing. Wow. I was on my way back to my uncle's house, and Edwin called me. I was on the train, so I went to voicemail, and I saw the voicemail. And he's like, hey, we have a bed for you. And I was like, no way. And it was like a big relief. And then I ended up staying at LA Family Housing for 6 months. And I didn't not do anything. I dropped out of school, but I went straight to work. And I saved up. FEMA was paying me good. So
you got FEMA right away. So that was the first one. Wow.
So it was paying me good, and I saved all that money. Because when I was staying at LA Family Housing, I didn't have to pay rent or anything. It was free. Wow. So I saved all that money and used most of it to pay after the village helped me with rapid rehousing. I used most of it to pay off my rent and stuff like that.
Wow. Yeah. And so what's it like at LA Family Housing? Did you have like your own room, or you had to set a bed, or what's it like?
It's horrible. It was horrible. Like it was 6 of us in one room, and it's like 3 bunk beds. The girl who used to sleep on top of me used to watch me sleep. Like, it was a weird experience. Like, I have sisters, so I grew up sharing rooms. I had no problem with that. But sharing rooms with absolute strangers and having to trust them, not just trust them because they live with you, but trust them while you sleep. And, like, it was hard to sleep for those 6 months. It was hard to feel comfortable. So it was tough.
Yeah, I bet. So then where did you save your money? Did you have a bank account?
I always had a bank, yeah. Luckily for me, like, my upbringing was okay. It was not that bad. Aside from, like, the emotional stuff, you know, I was kind of well off, I guess.
When you say you were well off, what do you mean?
I had a roof over my head. I had food to eat. My parents taught me a little bit of this, a little bit of that, you know, like how to open a bank, how to maintain a bank. Not a lot of, like I see it with the youth that come here, not a lot of them have that. They didn't have people to raise them, you know? They grew up in the system, so they were not taught the skills that I was taught through my parents or my grandparents, my cousins, my uncles. So even though my life was tough, it wasn't that tough. Like, that's how I used to see it when I was a client here. I was like, I can't complain because I see these people and they don't have family. I had some. Maybe I burned those bridges, but I had some, you know. So I chose to see the bright side. Yeah.
Are you in touch with your family now?
Yeah, actually, as the years passed, we mended our relationships and realized that, okay, this works, this doesn't work. So.
Wow. And what's your housing situation now?
I live alone. Yeah. I rent kind of like a half house from this lady in Sunland. So I have my own, it's like a one bedroom. I just don't have a kitchen. So, yeah.
Wow. And so, okay, so now you have a place to live. Now you have this job here, right? And you're the employment, what do you
say? Employment specialist.
Employment specialist,
yes.
Okay. So that means you help the kids that come through here get a job once they're stable? Or?
Yeah, not once they're stable, if they're looking for a job, because a lot of them live in the shelter, or even if they don't have anywhere to live, back then before the pandemic, they could shower here and get ready for work and then go to work. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I know having a place to live helps a lot when you work, but technically you don't need a place to live to work. Yeah, some people adapt around it.
And so then now that you've got your mental health in order, you have a house, you've got a job, right? You're doing things that you like. What do you see starting to happen for you? Like, what are your goals?
Well, I just got accepted into Mission College yesterday. So I'm planning to go back to school.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I want to be a therapist. Yes.
Alejandro's happy about that, right?
I understand how big of a role mental health plays in a lot of things. So I want to be able to give that back to the community and help people and share my story with them so they don't feel so alone.
Because if you, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to jump in because she already is doing that. You're already doing that here, but just with your experience and your knowledge about mental health, you can't hire that. You know, we're just so lucky that she already comes with all this knowledge. She won't here to do one job, but she knows the challenges and not just the homelessness, but with the mental health, the underlying issues, and that's very beneficial and very helpful for our youth here.
Oh, I can imagine, right? I mean, because if you hadn't had the mental health issues, do you think you ever would have been homeless?
Probably not, honestly, no.
Right? Yeah. So it's like what comes first, you know, mm-hmm. with it. Wow.
In my opinion, I think it's the mental health. I think the majority of our youth and even the adults that I see in LA Family Housing or people around, a lot of it is mental health. It's not because they're lazy or it's not because they don't want to work, or it's the lack of resources, it's the lack of support. So I feel like mental health has a big part in homelessness, big part. And that's what people fail to see. People just stigmatize it and be like, okay, they're lazy. They don't want to get off, their ass and go to work. Like, they're able-bodied. They have 2 feet to... Yeah, but what about their mind? Who's taking care of their mind?
Personally for you, how do you see this being remedied? Like how, because we have such a huge homeless population in LA, right? How do you see mm-hmm. that changing? Like how could we help that in a real way?
I think there's a lot of ways, but I feel like a big way to do that is awareness. Awareness and providing resources to people. Because a lot of people don't know that, like, if it wasn't for my school, would have never known this existed. Now, a lot of, like, people ask me, where do you work? And I tell them, they're like, oh, I never knew things like that existed. So I feel like it's resources and awareness that would help make a big change. And I feel like if you, like, my mom always told me this too, if you reach out to at least one person, that person will reach out to other people, and that person, it's a ripple effect. So I feel like awareness is a big thing.
When we do our outreach, when we go out and we, our teams will get together, our employment specialists, our peers, our case managers, will go out to the parks, the skate parks, and because they're young, Tay themselves, they can identify who are the homeless youth out there. Because homeless kids, homeless youth, don't look homeless. So a lot of our homeless youth are invisible. But our youth, our peers, our employment specialists are able to spot the homeless youth in the parks. They let them know about our services here, and they never heard of us. I've been staying in this park for the last 3 years, and I've never heard of it. We're less than a mile away from there. You know, so we try to come out as much as we can. Right now, we're very limited what we can do because of COVID. But we hear it all the time, you know, whenever I mingle with others to try to get funding or try to help with, really, I never knew you guys were there. I didn't know that you were able to supply that. But, you know, mm-hmm. it's always a challenge.
Maybe that's something we can build into the mural. And mm-hmm. if the mural is somewhere that's really public, you know what I mean?
Like, oh, excellent.
Right? Because I know you're an artist, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, oh, let's talk about your art, right?
I feel like my art is very reflective and light. I never paint dark paintings just because I feel like it's too heavy for me. It's hard for me to put what I feel that is dark into a painting. I understand that sharing your pain helps people understand, but also I don't want to share too much of my pain because then that's the energy you're emitting into the world, and I don't want that to come back. I want more light than dark around here.
Yeah. So going forward with this program, right, going with that you want to put light into the world rather than dark, what do you want to do for your episode? I really want to help bring out each person's native talent, like what they have, right?
Right. Right now, my form of art is painting. So that mural excited me that when he told me about that, that's what I was looking forward to. That's pretty cool. Like,
When they found out who was going to help with the mural, they
even,
because these are not just murals they see online or they heard of. These are murals many of our youth have come across on their daily lives. And
yeah,
Levi Ponce is
just so wonderful. We're so happy to have him. He's always been like you. He really feels like art heals.
It does.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, well, that's great for visual. So now what are we going to do with you for speaking? Let's say, is there like...
I feel like I would like to talk about mental health. And I don't know how that would play into with the art, but I would like to talk about that.
If you want to do mental health awareness to talk about that, you can make it not personal, but talk about different, like how it affects homelessness. You can do like a journalistic type of episode, right?
That would be cool.
If you're writing poetry, you can somehow...
Well, even what we could do is we can include the poem at the end. So
I was going to say that, yeah, like to close it off, that would be cool.
And I think that's wonderful because then that'll also serve the purpose of helping spread awareness.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Oh, you're wonderful. You are so wonderful.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't really like sharing my things. Like, I don't think I shared most of the things with Alejandro.
No. I knew some. Maybe a quarter of that.
Yeah.
You know? And even with that, I knew you were already very impressive. And
oh, thank you.
And then to hear the rest of it, it's
just, I decided to share it because I feel like this is a big purpose. So
yeah,
it's hard, and I tried to keep my tears in, but I feel like this is a big purpose, and I don't know. I'm passionate about helping people, especially people that are in the shoes that I once was in. Yeah. That's my therapist told me. The first step to change is acceptance. So once you accept that, okay, these things are with me because of what happened. Mm-hmm. They're not me. They're just something that happened to me. Then you can change. And
exactly.
That's when the world will change.
Yeah.
I do have to give it back to the village, though, because they helped me a lot. They gave me the support that I wasn't getting from my parents, that I should have been getting from my parents. They acted like mom and dad, not like an affectionate way, but more of like keeping me accountable. Like, hey, did you check on this? Did you go get your ID? Did you do that? So I feel like programs like this need to be out there. They do.
Oh, I'm in love with you already. You're just an amazing person. And Alejandro, we know. The mural that we're talking about is kind of a party of sorts that we're going to have at the end of our collaboration with the Drop-In Center. Muralist Levi Ponce and the Tay are going to design and create a large-scale mural in North Hollywood to see what it feels like to own space by creating art.
Great.
And then is there like a tagline that you guys like to, that you use or anything like that? Like
about the center?
Who would say? Well, you see Drop-In at the Drop-In Center?
You do.
Am I the only one who says that?
Yeah.
Really,
Grandpa.
Is that a thing? Not a hashtag?
I heard you say that.
And we're very happy to say that Gail is already working on her piece with her mentor, journalist Natalie Reddington.
I like it, though.
We look forward to bringing you more stories of the Tay. The best way to keep up with us is on Instagram. You can listen to past episodes of Changing the Narrative on connectapod.net. Our theme song is True by Haunted Horses NYC, whom you can also find on Spotify,
We are also so happy to say that after much worry, little Amado Lopez, only 1.5 years old, whose mom is ConnectPod co-founder Andrea Longoria Lopez, is home and happily recovering with his family after open-heart surgery. And Andrea and I want to bid a fond and hopefully temporary farewell to two of our first reporters, Victoria and Angie B., the fabulous Benitez sisters. We love you and we're going to miss you, and we know you're going to do just wonderful in Kansas. And hopefully they will be our first remote ConnectPod team bringing us what's up in Kansas. And on that note, I'm going to let Gail take us out. Thanks for listening.
For more resources, you guys can reach out to me here at the Drop-In Center. Our address is 6801 Coldwater Canyon Avenue. We're located at the back of the clinic with the black gates. Our number is 818-755-8786. And my email is galvarez@thevillagefs.org. Thank you. Don't be shy. Come on by.